This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Coming up next, Be My Eyes CEO Mike Buckley on Apple Viz acquisition. There are shared values there. Paul Martz talks about a long overdue step forward for blind cubers. Plus, technology, accessibility, health, and community news from Mind's Eye Radio. This is the Blindness and Disability News Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. This edition covers the week of September 1st, 2024. I hope all of you are doing well and enjoying the break in the hot weather this week. We've got lots of interesting stories for you this week, so let's give a listen. Our first story this week comes from Forbes magazine, and you can find them online at Forbes.com. That's Forbes.com. This is a story written by Stephen Aquino. It was published on August 29th. Be My Eyes CEO Mike Buckley on Apple Viz acquisition. There are shared values there. Be My Eyes this week made a big announcement. In a press release published on Wednesday, that's last Wednesday, the San Francisco-based company announced that it is acquiring disability community stalwart Apple Viz. As Be My Eyes writes, things looked bleak for Apple Viz just a few weeks ago. In July, founder David Goodwin announced with, quote, deep sadness, unquote, his intent to shutter the website due to a confluence of factors. Maintaining Apple Viz had become a, quote, full-time responsibility, unquote, for Goodwin since 2010. Notably, all these years done so voluntarily and without compensation. In a postscript to the original announcement from late July, Goodwin shared details on the Be My Eyes acquisition. Among other things, he noted the thrill of spreading the word on Apple Viz Reprieve, adding the move opens the door for, quote, exciting new possibilities, unquote, and emphasized the changing of hands did not involve lining his coffers financially. Goodwin said in part that Be My Eyes has, quote, demonstrated a profound understanding of Apple Viz's mission and the value it brings, unquote, and expressed his confidence that the company's commitment to the blind and low vision community, quote, aligns seamlessly with the principles that have guided Apple Viz since its inception, unquote. Most importantly, Apple Viz will retain full and unencumbered editorial independence going forward. Quote, I'm excited about the potential for Apple Viz to grow and evolve under Be My Eye stewardship, Goodwin said of the deal. Their expertise and resources will allow Apple Viz to develop and expand its platform in ways that would not have been possible under my leadership. While I am proud of what we have accomplished over the past 14 years, I am even more optimistic about what the future holds for Apple Viz, unquote. In a brief interview conducted via telephone, Be My Eyes Chief Executive Officer Mike Buckley explained it felt like, quote, a death in the community, unquote, when word spread that Apple Viz was shutting down. He called Apple Viz work over the last decade and a half remarkable and said Be My Eyes felt compelled to do something to help Goodwin and team. The company considered starting a fundraiser and seeking corporate sponsor, but ultimately decided to pursue an endeavor in part because of every conversation, Buckley said, began and ended with the notion that Apple Viz was an invaluable resource that couldn't go away forever. Quote, it has too much value and unity for the community, he said. Through our discussions, we eventually got to the point where it was, why not us? There are shared values there. We provide our services for free to blind and low vision people, both at Be My Eyes and Apple Viz, unquote. Buckley continued, quote, we at Be My Eyes really want to empower people in the blind and low vision community, unquote. Buckley told me the internal discussions over what to do with AppleViz lasted, quote, about 3 days, unquote, which were followed by discussions with Goodwin and the AppleViz team. After some back and forth spanning multiple meetings, the call was made on a Saturday morning to proceed with the acquisition. A specific plan of action was put together, one that put the needs of the AppleViz editorial staff at the forefront. The procedural process was set in motion, with paperwork being drawn up and the Be My Eyes board voting its approval. Buckley characterized the talks as, quote, relatively quick, unquote, as far as matters of this ilk typically go. Buckley reemphasized that the promise that AppleViz, now essentially a subsidiary of Be My Eyes, would come back to a hero's welcome and operate with full editorial independence. Be My Eyes is in the process of hiring AppleViz staffers, with Buckley telling me that he doesn't want to break anything that isn't broken. His overarching goal is to get AppleViz back on its proverbial feet and get them back to stability and sustainability. Buckley was blunt in his assessment from his end of things. It's imperative, he said, for Be My Eyes to, quote, shut our mouths, unquote, and actively listen not merely to the needs and whims of AppleViz staffers, but to the community at large. Responding to what both sides need and want will dictate what Be My Eyes and AppleViz does together in the future, as there remain several open questions yet to be answered. Quote, I'm not going to make any promises about the future until we really take a pause and listen to the community of users and what's going to best serve their needs and the things they want, unquote, Buckley said. Buckley said he hopes to organize an open forum of sorts during which members of the community can share their thoughts on AppleViz and its future. How exactly that will look is unclear at the moment, although Buckley imagined it something like Reddit, or perhaps, quote, a big Zoom call, unquote. The most important thing to keep in mind, he added, is Be My Eyes feels strongly it, quote, owes a degree of transparency to people, unquote, about what's next. The community's feelings of dread quickly turned to optimism once Be My Eyes rode in as the White Knight and saved the day. Buckley said people have been re-energized by the news, saying people were generally happy but more enthused about what he described as an, quote, incredibly valuable repository of content, unquote, coming back from the cliff's edge. In the big picture, Buckley told me Be My Eyes believes it's capable of, quote, growing the number of people that get value from AppleViz, unquote, while simultaneously growing the existing Be My Eyes community. The mission has been, and always will be, to make the world a more accessible place. The only way to do so, Buckley said, is by, quote, collectively growing our impact. Our thesis is working together and combining forces increases our impact and what we're delivering and creating with the community, unquote. He acknowledged, however, there rightfully remains skepticism over whether AppleViz can keep its editorial integrity and Apple's, quote, future direction, unquote. Nevertheless, he said the reception to the acquisition has been positive, at least what's been said to his face. Buckley said, quote, we'll see what happens, unquote, in the weeks and months to come. Buckley said if the community hears only one thing, he wants it to be known far and wide, Be My Eyes is 100% behind AppleViz, and the reason they did what they did for Goodwin and team is because of the, quote, the impacting utility, unquote, AppleViz offers to the blind and low vision community. Our next story on this week's program comes from Smart Cities Dive, and you can find them at smartcitiesdive.com. This is written by Dan Zukowski and was published on August 24th. The U.S. Department of Transportation proposes a rule on pedestrian accessibility standards. The DOT wants to clarify how Americans with Disabilities Act applies to pedestrian facilities, including transit stops. The Dive Brief, The U.S. Department of Transportation published a proposed rule on August 22nd to incorporate accessibility guidelines for pedestrian facilities in the public right-of-way, including sidewalks, crosswalks, pedestrian traffic signals, transit stops, and on-street parking. The guidelines that DOT looks to incorporate were issued last year by the Architectural and Transportation Barriers Compliance Board. And those guidelines, which became effective September 7, 2023, fall under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which applies to state and local government facilities, among others, and the Architectural Barriers Act, which applies to many federal facilities. And the Dive Insight: until now, state and local governments have been left to determine how to comply with the ADA's mandate to make public pedestrian transportation facilities accessible to people with physical or mental impairments or a history of impairment, according to the Architectural and Transportation Barriers Compliance Board. The board's accessibility guidelines will serve as the basis for enforcing standards. The DOT interprets the guidelines as including transit stops, which it defines as, quote, an area that is designated for passengers to board or alight from buses, rail cars, or other transportation vehicles that operate on a fixed route or scheduled route, including bus stops and boarding platforms, unquote. The definition excludes intercity rail, except where a stop is located in the public right of way. The DOT says it has concerns with the location of some transit stops that overlap with vehicular lanes, including bicycle lanes that may put some people with vision issues or use wheelchairs at risk of being struck by a motorist or bicycles. The department is asking for comment on those concerns and is interested in potential solutions other than prohibiting co-location of transit stops in vehicular lanes. The DOT rule, which is open for public comment until September 23, 2024, will apply only to new construction or alterations of transit stops in the public right of way. As we continue with this week's program, let's pay a visit to the United Nations Human Rights Office of the High Commissioner. In a press release that came out on August 24th, experts of the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities appreciate Ukraine's efforts to uphold the rights of persons with disabilities during the war, raise questions on children forcibly transported to Russian-controlled areas, and the construction of new institutions. The Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities today concluded its review of the combined second and third periodic report of Ukraine, with committee experts appreciating the state's efforts to uphold the rights of persons with disabilities during the war, while also raising questions on children, including those with disabilities, who have been forcibly transported to Russian-controlled areas, and the construction of new institutions in Ukraine. A committee expert appreciated the efforts of the government of Ukraine to uphold the rights of persons with disabilities during the challenging times of the war. Amalia Gamio, committee expert and task force coordinator, said the committee's major concerns included the children of disabilities who were facing the consequences of the armed conflict and being separated from their families. Information has been received of the forced transport of children, including those with disabilities, from territories in Ukraine to territories under Russian control. Around 200,000 children have been illegally transported to occupied territories. What was the situation of those children who were taken away? Ms. Gamio also noted that the state said it was prioritizing deinstitutionalization. What was being done by the government to deter investment in institutions? In several regions, institutions had been built using private investment, including German funds, in coordination with Ukrainian donors. What could be done to stop these hospitals being built? What measures were being taken to apply the moratorium properly so no more people entered institutions? The delegation said official statistics stated that 19,546 children had been forcibly displaced by Russian forces, but it was understood that these numbers were likely to be underreported. The government was working with partners, including the United Nations Children's Fund, to facilitate the return of children to Ukrainian territories. The government had introduced the Bring Kids Back initiative to facilitate the return of children. The children who had returned were provided with a comprehensive set of services, including psychological support, social services, and education. The delegation said deinstitutionalization was a key priority for the government. A coordination center was established to ensure the development of family-based forms of care for children, including children with disabilities. Under the coordination center, a regional council had been established to ensure a coordinated approach and information sharing on deinstitutionalization. This included preventing institutions from being established. The state stressed to development partners that investment should not be made into institutional care settings, but instead should be channeled into the development of community-based services to support children with disabilities. Irina Postolovska, Deputy Minister of Social Policy of Ukraine for European Integration and head of the delegation, presenting the report, said Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine had caused widespread destruction, resulting in the loss of human lives and livelihoods. Today, 2.8 million people lived with disabilities in Ukraine, yet this number was continually increasing due to the Russian invasion. The war had caused a sharp increase in the number of people with disabilities. For Ukraine, protecting the rights of persons with disabilities during the war and ensuring their integration into society was of utmost importance. In closing remarks, Ms. Postolovska said the devastating impact of Russia's full-scale invasion had touched on many spheres of life in Ukraine. Despite this, since the full-scale invasion, the government had been able to provide social services to all vulnerable groups, including persons with disabilities. Sawalek Thonke, committee expert and task force member, thanked the delegation for an open dialogue. Implementation gaps when it came to the convention remained in many areas, in particular for women, children, and older persons with disabilities living in conflict-afflicted areas. The committee would elaborate on all issues within their concluding observations for Ukraine's further action. The delegation of Ukraine was comprised of representatives of the Ministry of Social Policy of Ukraine for European Integration, Ministry of Social Policy of Ukraine for Digital Development, Digital Transformations, and Digitization, the President's Commissioner for the Barrier-Free Society Issues, the Fund for Social Protection of Persons with Disabilities, and the Permanent Mission of Ukraine to the United Nations Office in Geneva. Let's pay a visit to Blind New World at blindnewworld.org, which is a blog site operated by the Perkins School for the Blind. On this week's story, Keep Swimming, Perspective from Paralympian Aspen Shelton. Complications from a brain tumor left Team USA swimmer Aspen Shelton with new disabilities beyond her blindness. But she's diving into a new normal and smashing new goals. Hi, I'm Aspen Shelton, a blind and paralyzed Paralympic swimmer for Team USA. I was born prematurely at 26 weeks, weighed just 1 pound and 12 ounces, and was diagnosed with retinopathy of prematurity, or ROP, stage 3, with a plus disease, as well as a few other eye conditions. With the exception of an IEP in school for accommodations, I grew up somewhat removed from the blind and visually impaired community, and I didn't start learning how to use a cane until the age of 16. I wasn't able to do contact sports for fear of retinal detachment, so I competed in swimming against my able-bodied peers and had great success, going to start, sectionals, zones, etc. Becoming part of Team USA. In 2016, I was made aware of the Paralympics and decided to pursue trying to make the Paralympic team for Tokyo 2020. I had immediate success, earning a spot on the national team my first meet and getting an invitation to go to the World Series event in Berlin, where I earned a world record and multiple medals. After my success at the World Series event, I went on to go to the World Championships, Pan-Pacific Championships, Pan-American Games, Nationals, and other World Series events, medaling at all of them. I even graduated high school early with honors to go live at the Olympic and Paralympics Training Center to pursue my dreams. Facing unanticipated challenges. Throughout 2019, my health began to decline, and in November of 2019, I had a stroke before the Nationals. Despite this, I competed at the Nationals and did well. However, after the meet, my medical team deemed it unsafe for me to swim. I needed to figure out what was going on medically, so I went home to Texas right before COVID-19 hit. While in Texas, in the midst of COVID-19, I was admitted to the hospital for a battery of testing, where it was found that I had a brain tumor in the center of my brain. I eventually had surgery to remove the tumor. Upon waking up from surgery, I was totally blind and paralyzed on my left side. I was devastated. However, my medical problems weren't over. Not even a month later, I was back in the hospital fighting to stay alive after being diagnosed with meningitis and hydrocephalus, further worsening my health issues. I ended up going to an inpatient day neurorehabilitation center to relearn how to function on a daily basis, learning how to walk, talk, stay awake for more than an hour a day, and much, much more all over again. Keep swimming. I was determined to return to what I deemed normal, so I began classes online at Loyola University, Maryland, while attending day neuro, with the goals of attending school in person in the fall and returning to the pool. I not only achieved my goals, but surpassed them. I attended school in person in fall of 2021 and returned to the pool, swimming for the Division I team and learning how to swim again with my new disabilities. I recently graduated with honors with a bachelor's degree in communications, with specializations in public relations and advertising, and a minor in biology from Loyola University, Maryland, and I am currently pursuing my master's degree. Aspen Shelton is a blind and paralyzed Paralympic swimmer for Team USA and a recent graduate of Loyola University, Maryland. She is a brain tumor survivor who has a passion for disability advocacy, service dog access rights, and brain tumor awareness. Aspen enjoys being outdoors, riding horses, playing the piano, and being with family and friends. You can follow Aspen on Instagram, Facebook, and X, formerly Twitter. And as a bonus, Aspen's guide dog Lake is also on Instagram. Our next article comes to us from the American Council for the Blind at acb.org. Speak up skills. Have yours got rusty? This is written by Hannah Fairburn. During the pandemic, everything went online, and a lot of it stayed there. Many committee meetings, support groups, courses, and doctor's visits are still virtual. This has obvious benefits, but we have lost practice asserting ourselves in the world of sight. How to speak up effectively when sighted people are using visual cues is a skill that takes learning and practice. Nonverbal communication among people who see conveys more than words. They express intention, feelings, exchange invitations to connect, and of course can see who is there. How to respond to invisible incoming cues has been left out of skills training. This is a serious omission. Acquaintances, receptionists, and cashiers invite us without speech and expect us to know where they are standing. Because speak up skills are rarely part of training programs, we learn to manage these almost daily interactions, often awkward, sometimes distressing, by ourselves. And the result can be coping mechanisms that aren't productive. In a couple of introductory discussions, an instructor can explain the concept of speaking up and offer basic tools, including what rights we have under the ADA, or Americans with Disabilities Act. After this, role-playing is an excellent method of putting the ideas into practice. A small group of people who all live with blindness or low vision can work on solutions to common situations by role-playing them. It's dynamic and often hilarious as participants start acting the parts, trading roles as the blind person, obtuse cashier, and the irate customer at the front of the line. It relieves the interaction stress and, most importantly, the group comes up with great ways to tackle the issue fast. After a few sessions, some participants will be ready to continue independently. Assertiveness is defined in, quote, your perfect right, and check the reference at the end of this article, as, quote, expressing our needs and feelings honestly and comfortably. We have to speak up with a tone and demeanor that is assertive, quote, direct, positive, and firm, unquote. And with blindness, we have to be specific, too. This is quite a skill and takes practice and preparation, coaching the sighted person we are talking to how to communicate with us while keeping things relaxed. Practicing assertive speech when you are the customer or patient is a good place to start, because you are paying the bill. Family, especially extended family, can need a more strategic and long-term approach, and employees whose blindness is not a feature of their employment have to have extra assertive and strategic skills. Social events are important for everyone. We humans need the company of others. We absolutely need our blind friends, but we also need to have skills to engage in the sighted social world. As you know, social events for 6 to 10 people often work well for blind and sighted people alike, especially if guests are mostly sitting down. Large events where people are standing and moving around are far more sight-dependent. If your hearing is good, you can pick up on breath, fabric movement, and other subtle indicators and distinguish the tone, distance, and direction of a voice, but still cannot perceive the nonverbal cues that start interactions or know who is standing where. After staying home so long during the pandemic, it's no surprise if some of us have forgotten what assertiveness in social settings feels like. It's uncomfortable to express our needs out loud. But people who cover up and cope can end up depressed or angry. Of course, if it's a birthday bash for you, or you are the speaker at an event, asserting yourself is easier. But if the event is for someone you don't know, or you haven't arranged assistance in advance, it takes confidence and clear thinking to have a satisfactory time. We do practice whenever we open the front door or walk into a store. But it's more effective and much more fun to practice with a few other people who share the problem. Here are situations that come up pretty often. Getting to the back of the line. Finding out who you are talking to and where they are standing. Mentioning your vision loss in a few words. Deflecting intrusive questions about your vision. Joining a group already talking. And asking for accommodation before or during an event. This fall, I will be working with groups and workshops to find out what people want to practice in speaking up and what has changed post-pandemic. I am beginning to work on a short practice book of speak-up skills and role plays, a companion to When You Can't Believe Your Eyes, Vision Loss and Personal Recovery. This was published in 2019. The NLS call sign is 11619. It's also on Bookshare. And cited earlier in the article is the book Your Perfect Right, Assertiveness and Equality in Your Life and Relationships, the 10th edition, from Alberti and Emmons. NLS call number is 90308. And if you have just joined us, you are listening to the Blindness and Disability News Hour from Mind's Eye Radio. This program covers the week of September 1st, 2024. Thanks for joining us, and now back to the program. We kick off the second half of this week's program with a visit to the Braille Monitor magazine, the flagship publication of the National Federation of the Blind, and you can find them online at nfb.org. It's from the August-September issue. A long overdue step forward for blind cubers. That's C-U-B-E-R-S, cubers. We'll find out about them, what they are. This is written by Paul Martz and introduced by these words from the editor of the Braille Monitor. I believe this is Paul's first contribution to our magazine. He started going blind in 2004, and in 2014, he switched to screen readers, learned Braille, and bought his first tactile cube. That's when he began to identify as blind. He worked for 30 years as a software developer. In his retirement, he writes, "Beyond the Rubik's Cube book, he is a published author of science fiction. He also blogs about blind technology at the Apple Viz website. In addition to all of this, he reads voraciously. And here's what he has to say about the Rubik's Cube. NFB's partnership with Spin Master to develop the Rubik's Sensory Cube is exciting news. It sets a standard for tactile cube markings, increases the legitimacy of non-visual cubing, and opens cubing to a much wider audience. What? You're not excited? Well, you should be. Solving the cube provides many benefits. It's a great tool for exercising both short and long-term memory that develops tactile sensitivity, fine motor skills, and problem-solving ability, valuable skills for anyone living in today's fast-paced world. The Rubik's Cube is also relaxing and meditative. When solving, I enter the same flow state that many authors, musicians, and athletes experience. It's a pleasant form of concentration that exercises my brain, nervous system, and muscle memory. Never mind all that, it's infectiously fun. It's a craze that has endured for decades, attracting new enthusiasts every day from ages 7 to 70. Once you learn to solve a cube, you're unlikely to put it down. I've been a cuber since the Ideal Toy Company launched the Rubik's Cube in 1980. At the time, I was a 17-year-old puzzle nut with low vision. Solution guides hadn't been published yet, and the internet was a distant science fiction dream. To solve the cube, I spent weeks filling a notebook with ideas and observations until I had devised my solution. When I lost my remaining vision to retinitis pigmentosa, I switched to off-brand tactile cubes or modified standard cubes with bump dots. The quality has been variable, and of the many cubes I own, no two are exactly alike. I'm looking forward to comparing a Rubik's sensory cube to my ad hoc solutions. Today, I solve the cube in World Cube Association events, competing alongside my sighted peers. I'm part of a global cubing community that puts me in contact with other cubers around the world. I'm not setting any world records, but as a 60-plus senior solving a tactile cube, I'm rather proud of my unofficial 1 minute 17-second personal best. Nonetheless, two barriers impede our ability to participate in this stimulating pastime. The cubing community has innumerable websites, videos, software tools, and solution guides devoted to solving the cube. As you might expect, most of this information is visual, creating an accessibility issue for the blind community. Fortunately, this is a problem that I can fix. I'm writing a solution guide intended for blind readers. The book and companion website will provide text-based instructions for solving the 3x3 cube with no images or diagrams. I hope to publish the book in Braille sometime next year. The second barrier is a lack of standardization. The original Rubik's Cube uses six colors in a standard arrangement, often known as BOY, or B-O-Y, for the clockwise ordering of the blue, orange, and yellow sides. Sighted cubers can pick up any cube and find the colors in their expected locations. In contrast, there are no standards for tactile cubes. Different manufacturers use different tactile shapes and arrangements. Once you become accustomed to a particular arrangement and style of textures, it will take a significant amount of time and practice to adjust to another tactile cube. The success of the Sensory Cube and Rubik's brand strength will pressure other manufacturers to adopt its texture style and arrangement as a standard. I applaud NFB and Spin Master for partnering on this important development. An affordable, high-quality, accessible alternative to the standard cube has been long overdue. The success of the Sensory Cube might inspire other toy manufacturers to create more inclusive products. And making this classic puzzle accessible includes us in a pastime that has historically been closed. Let's pay a visit to iAccessibility.net and Exploring AI for the Blind, Tools and Technologies, An Introduction to AI. This was published on August 27th and written by Taylor Arndt. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is a technology that mimics human intelligence to perform tasks like understanding language, recognizing objects, and making decisions. While AI might seem complex, it's quickly becoming an integral part of everyday life, offering incredible tools for everyone, including those who are blind and visually impaired. AI can help you navigate the world, access information, and communicate more effectively. How artificial intelligence can help you. For blind users, AI can be a game changer, making many daily tasks easier and more accessible. Here are some of the most impactful AI tools that you can start using today. First is ChatGPT, your conversational assistant. What it does. ChatGPT is an AI you can talk to like a friend or assistant. You can ask it questions, get help writing emails, or even have it explain complex topics in simple terms. How to use it. To get started, visit chat.openai.com on your web browser. You can type or speak your questions, and ChatGPT will respond with helpful information. Whether you need to draft a message, learn something new, or just chat, ChatGPT is there to assist you. Free plan and pricing. First, the free plan. ChatGPT offers a free tier that gives you access to the basic features of the AI. This plan is great for getting started and exploring what the AI can do without any financial commitment. Next is ChatGPT Plus. For those who want more advanced features, faster response times, and priority access during high-demand periods, OpenAI offers a paid plan called ChatGPT Plus. This plan costs $20 per month and provides enhanced capabilities, making it ideal for users who rely on ChatGPT for frequent and complex tasks. Getting started. You don't need an account to start using the free version of ChatGPT, but signing up can provide a more personalized experience. If you're new to AI, I highly recommend exploring the free plan first to see how it can fit into your daily routine. As you become more comfortable, you can decide if upgrading to ChatGPT Plus is right for you. Next is Seeing AI, your eyes for the visual world. What it does. Developed by Microsoft, Seeing AI is a free app that narrates the world around you. It can read text, describe people and objects, and even identify colors. For example, you can use it to read a letter, check the color of your clothes, or even recognize the faces of people in photos. How to use it. Download the Seeing AI app from the App Store. Once installed, you can use your phone's camera to point at text or objects, and the app will describe what it sees. Seeing AI is particularly useful for handling tasks like reading grocery labels, identifying ingredients, and even recognizing currency. And then there's Be My AI, a companion for visual assistants. What it does? Be My AI is a feature within the Be My Eyes app, which connects blind users with sighted volunteers via video call. With its integration of GPT-4, Be My AI can now provide instant description of photos, identify objects, and help with tasks like setting up a new device or reading product labels, all through artificial intelligence without needing a human volunteer. How to use it? Start by downloading the Be My Eyes app. Within the app, you can use the Be My AI feature to ask the AI to describe what's in front of your camera. This is incredibly useful for quick, real-time assistance with visual tasks. Trust but verify, a note on AI limitations. While AI can significantly enhance your daily life, it's essential to remember that it isn't perfect. AI tools like ChatGPT, Seeing AI, and Be My AI are incredibly advanced, but they sometimes make mistakes or misinterpret information. Therefore, it's always a good practice to trust but verify. Double-check important details when possible, and use AI as a helpful assistant rather than a sole source of truth. Everyday uses of AI. AI isn't just for special occasions. It can be part of your daily routine. In your morning routine, check the weather, get news updates, or listen to your schedule for the day using AI tools. While shopping, use AI to read labels, compare products, or find the best deals. When you're traveling, get AI-assisted navigation to ensure you reach your destination safely or effectively. And for entertainment, discover new books, movies, or music recommendations based on your preferences. And you can find all of these online at the following websites. ChatGPT, again, is at chat.openai.com. Seeing AI is at apps.apple.com, US/app/seeingAI. And Be My AI can be found at www.bemyeyes.com. And next is something entertaining from gamesindustry.biz. Xbox reveals 4 new accessibility options for disabled players. The company has even redesigned its packaging with accessibility in mind, too. And this is written by Vicky Blake and published on August 22nd. Xbox has revealed 4 new accessibility options for disabled players. This includes 3 new accessible devices: the Xbox Adaptive Joystick, the 8-bit DualLite 2.4GB wireless controller, and the BioWave Proteus controller, which have been developed in consultation with the gaming and disability community. 3D printable files for more customizable thumbstick toppers, and a new Xbox feature, Toggle Hold. Xbox says players have said that there's a need for, quote, an affordable singular joystick, unquote, to use alongside the Xbox Adaptive Controller. Further to years of research, testing, and collaboration, the joystick includes 4 input buttons on the front, a standard Xbox thumbstick, and, quote, 2 additional buttons that mimic the bumper and trigger placement on a traditional controller, unquote. The Xbox Adaptive Joystick is set to launch in early 2025 for about $30, whilst the 8-bit DualLite which has been designed for gamers with limited mobility, is live now and retails for about $60, which is the cost of a standard controller. The Snap and Play BioWave Proteus, which offers over, quote, 100 million different combinations, unquote, is also available now and is a little pricier at $300. Xbox also says that it has launched a new toggle hold accessibility feature, though only available to those in the Xbox Insiders program for now. The toggle hold is intended to make it easier to use a controller for people who have difficulty holding prolonged button presses. Interestingly, Xbox has even redesigned its packaging with accessibility in mind, too. The packaging for the adaptive joystick features a center seamed shipped with looped tape, a large base tab to, quote, prompt an uncomplicated out-of-box experience, unquote, a hinged box lid, and no twist ties. These insights have also been applied to the packaging of the new Xbox Series XS console options. Quote, at Xbox, we are committed to empowering everyone to play the games they want, with the people they want, anywhere they want, in a way that works for them. Xbox explains in an Xbox Wire post detailing its new options. Quote, this includes our mission of making gaming accessible for the more than 425 million players with disabilities worldwide. As we were talking about artificial intelligence a few minutes ago, let's dive a little deeper with a visit to the American Foundation for the Blind and the current issue of Access World magazine, Enhancing Digital Accessibility Through AI. And this is written by Aaron Preece. The rapid progress in generative AI, or artificial intelligence, over the past 2 or 3 years shows serious promise for drastically increasing accessibility in many aspects of life for people who are blind or have low vision. Previously, we've discussed the benefits of using services like Be My Eyes and the recognition features on iOS. However, as AI has increased in complexity and understanding, it has also become valuable for improving accessibility on desktop computers. In this article, we will specifically focus on GPT-4o, though other highly complex AI models such as Google's Gemini, Anthropic's Claude, and Meta's Llama, or LLAMA, may achieve similar results. Improving PDF accessibility. Even at their most accessible, PDF documents can be challenging to navigate and manage when using a screen reader. While services exist to convert PDFs into more screen reader-friendly formats, such as Word or HTML, these conversations often struggle to accurately follow the tag structure of the original PDF. Additionally, many PDF documents lack proper tagging altogether, requiring the use of the Infer Reading Order from Document option in Adobe Reader, which is far from perfect. I've discovered that generative AI can take the contents of an unstructured PDF and turn it into an accessible form with proper formatting. If you have an image-only PDF, you can either feed that PDF directly to the AI or use a service to break it down into individual images and then feed those one by one into the AI for greater accuracy. Simply asking the AI to convert the PDF into your preferred format, and I personally always choose HTML, with specific parameters, and then uploading the PDF directly can yield surprisingly good results. However, it's important to be aware of the tendency for AI to hallucinate, that is, to return incorrect data as if it were correct. For example, when I upload a PDF to the AI, it started guessing at the content after a certain point, generating text that didn't accurately reflect the PDF. A better approach was to select all the text from the PDF and paste it into the AI, which resulted in a much more accurate outcome. Flexibility and adaptability of modern AI. Modern AI's ability to continually follow instructions without requiring overly detailed prompts is particularly useful. While working on this process, I sometimes found that the AI wasn't outputting the formats I wanted or was structuring data incorrectly. In these cases, because the AI can only generate certain portions at a time, I could interrupt at certain points and ask it to continue from the top. The AI's capability to understand plain language and work with you as if it were a person offers a lot of flexibility in how you want the information presented and what you can ask the AI to do. Functionality isn't limited to PDFs. If you have any text data that is unformatted or difficult to read, think tables that aren't properly constructed, you can ask AI to properly format them for much easier reading. Accessing and analyzing data in images. Another useful ability of AI is the extraction and analysis of data from images. Whether it's an inaccessible image or one with a proper description but lacking detailed access, artificial intelligence or AI can help. For instance, you can feed an unlabeled image of a chart or diagram to the AI and get answers to your questions about the data it contains. The AI can convert the data into a text table or present it in another format that's easier to work with. You can also ask AI to analyze the data. For example, if you have a chart showing the tracking of two different statistics and you want to know when those two statistics converge, you can ask the AI. A quick example would be a chart that lists months with restaurant revenue and holidays. You could ask the AI if revenue for the restaurant went up or down during holidays, and if so, which holidays caused increases or decreases. This kind of analysis, which might be simple to do visually, can be challenging if you're working with raw data, but AI can make it accessible. And so, the bottom line. Outside of those use cases, there are likely many other situations where AI could be beneficial depending on your needs. Essentially, if there's something where you could give someone visual information and have them create a text or similar equivalent, it can be done with AI. There may be limitations when dealing with niche subjects or specialized knowledge, but so far I've found few limitations in what I've tried. As AI continues to improve, it's exciting to see where the technology will take us next. New input formats are always being added, such as audio, and the AI itself is always increasing in complexity and capability. We're living in an exciting time for AI-assisted accessibility. And from the National Federation of the Blind at nfb.org comes this quick item, a way to make new friends. Are you looking for a fun, friendly, and supportive community of blind and low-vision people? Do you want to chat, play games, and make new friends using your microphone and computer? Then you should check out blindcafe.net, the online home of the Blind Cafe. Blind Cafe is a website that connects you with other blind and low-vision people from all over the world. You can join the Team Talk server, where you can chat with others in real time, participate in trivia contests, and enjoy various games and activities. You can also browse the website for useful resources, information, and tips for living with blindness or low vision. Blind Cafe is more than just a website. It's a community of people who share your experiences, challenges, and joys. It's a place where you can find support, friendship, and fun. It's a place where you can be yourself. So, what are you waiting for? Visit www.blindcafe.net today and join the Blind Cafe community, and you'll be glad you did. And that's www.blindcafe.net. But there is more. Are you looking for more than just a variety of great music? Do you want to hear from DJs who love bringing the music to you? How about joining contests to win prizes? Then you need to tune in to www.blindcaferadio.com, the station that raises Cane, and Cane here is spelled C-A-N-E. Blind Cafe Radio is an internet radio station where music matters. You can listen to it on your Alexa device, your computer, your Victor stream, or your phone. You can also interact with your favorite DJs on Facebook or Twitter. You can even check out their podcasts on your favorite platform. Don't miss out on the fun and the music. Listen to www.blindcaferadio.com today and discover the art of music. And that about wraps up this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour. This program covers the week of September 1st, 2024. My name is Bill. Thanks for joining us this week. This program, as always, is a production and presentation of Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. Hope you all have a good week. Enjoy the nice weather we've got coming up. Spend some time outdoors. Catch up on that yard work. Let your pets out to run, but keep them hydrated. Hope to see you next week. Stay safe. See you. Bye.